Welcome to the Issue Is Podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, two of the smartest and funniest guys I know. These are guys I turn to for my political information. Peter Hamby is host of a great podcast called The Powers That Be for Puck News. He also hosts for Snapchat. Mike Murphy, longtime GOP strategist in the John McCain, Arnold Schwarzenegger wing of the party, not the Donald Trump wing of the party. He hosts another great podcast called Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod and Robert Gibbs. Both of them join us for a deep dive conversation on a lot of different headlines. Talk about homelessness, Gavin Newsom. We talk about President Trump and Chris Christie and Ron DeSantis. We talk about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. And we talk about the California Senate race ahead. All of that with them. A little later, we talk with Rick Caruso about his trip to the Vatican to meet with Pope Francis and talk about Los Angeles. But let's start with Mike and with Peter and our first topic, homelessness.
Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Good to see you. Okay, so let's start with the issue of homelessness, which, of course, is the biggest issue in California and the whole state, but especially bad here in L.A. County. We got some new results for the new homeless count. I want to put up on the screen. Year over year, homelessness up 9% in L.A. County, up 10% in L.A. City. And since 2015, it's up 70% in L.A. County. Mike, what's the politics of homelessness? And does this actually really hurt the Democrats who are in charge of this state?
Well, it allows people to make a great case, outsiders, be they Republican or Democrats who aren't holding office. Like, we keep pouring money at it, and the situation gets worse. I think it was interesting of Mayor Bass a while ago, not long ago, on the six-month anniversary or whatever, they declared, we have some good progress. And then this big Godzilla foot came in and reset the thing to, it's the iceberg on which California politicians keep hitting. Very hard problem to solve, and most of them are part of a system that doesn't really have the tools to solve it. I think it's trouble.
And in fairness to Bass, this count was done in January, just a few weeks after she took office, so it'll be interesting to see. Next year will be more of a sense of what she's done. But Peter, I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, Ron DeSantis, you know, not the front runner, but maybe the Republican nominee, came to San Francisco recently and literally just posted up in some corner of the city and filmed in front of tents, in front of probably some addicted folks. Look at the mess that California is. We don't want the rest of the country to be like this. He routinely attacks Gavin Newsom for California being a mess. Look, this is anecdotal, less journalism. If you leave California, if you're on social media, it's the number one thing people say about Los Angeles. Like, ooh, even if you go down to San Diego and take an Uber, I would never live up there. You step on needles in Venice Beach. Look, some of that is exaggerated, but some of it's not. And as a Venice resident, I think that's the case.
And it is true. When you travel other places, you notice there aren't as many homeless people. Mike, Peter brings up Gavin Newsom. Yeah. Obviously, Ron DeSantis brings up Gavin Newsom. Does this stick to him? Because it seems like right now he's having a good run of things.
Yeah, but he's also, you know, a bag of cement can win the governor's race here if it has a D painted on it. It's just the nature of it. If Gavin Newsom was in Utah, he wouldn't be elected governor. There'd be a Republican who's politically bulletproof. So, but he's on the back nine now. I mean, he's been reelected. I think he would like to run for president. They're doing lots of weird little presidential stunt stuff without getting in Biden's way. But, you know, I'm easy to find in the yellow pages should we need a Democratic nominee. You know, I got a big ad with my picture.
Yeah.
But if he does eventually run in a cycle or two, if we are still branded not the opportunity state, but the left-wing homeless paradise state, it's going to be a huge albatross for him. Yeah. Remember Mike Dukakis, the Massachusetts miracle, which died on a second look.
And for our younger viewers, the Yellow Pages is a phone book that used to be up where you could look up people.
You couldn't type into it. It wouldn't do all the work, but you could flip pages.
Peter, it's really striking, though, in sort of right-wing media, there seems to be this assumption that Gavin Newsom is going to be the nominee. Tucker Carlson said it recently. Tommy Lahren said it recently, that there's going to be this plot where somehow Biden's out and Newsom is in. Why do you think you keep hearing that on the right?
I'd like Mike's take on this, but do you remember that book, speaking of something from the Yellow Pages era, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus? I've always thought this. Republicans don't understand Democrats and certainly how Democratic politics works, the machinery of it. And Democrats don't understand Republican politics. That's just probably why the parties exist in the first place. The idea that, like, Biden is going to dump Kamala as VP or Biden's not going to run and Democrats are going to put up Newsom, that's just, like, not going to happen. I do think Newsom is crafting the space, and our mutual friend Jonathan Martin wrote about this after the midterms, where Newsom was thinking Democrats were going to get thumped in the midterms. Fast forward a couple days, oh, I'm going to be Biden's number one surrogate here. That's the act he's doing right now, to go to bat for Biden and be more combative, perhaps more articulate in certain ways, maybe step in if something does happen. But, man, I thought you told me we were going to talk about the California Senate race today, so I was looking up some polling about that. I think it was an Emerson poll recently listed Newsom as the most popular politician in the state of California, but his ceiling in that poll was 45%. So, like, you're the most popular guy in politics in the state, and you're not even at 50%. Like, he's got challenges.
Yeah, and you're talking about the way that Democrats view Republicans, or Republicans view Democrats. Let's talk for a moment about the way that Democrats view Republicans, because Democrats would think Donald Trump's got to be toast after everything that's happened, but the Republican base seems to love him, except for you. Let's put up 538, put together an average of all of the recent polls of Republican voters nationwide. Donald Trump at 52%. Ron DeSantis seems to be going in the wrong direction at 24%. Mike Pence in third place at 7%. Everybody else under 5%. Are the indictments helping? I know you hope that they don't, but what's going on with
the
base?
Cold-eyed politician. I've been in the Republican business for over 30 years. And here's a little secret from the National Consultant Union Hall. Don't trust early national primary polls if there's a contest. Because if a bunch of voters, Republicans and independents in Iowa and New Hampshire decide no more Trump, this thing will flip and crumble immediately. So these national polls are fun. They keep cable news busy. I can only quote the great Milt Gwertzman, who I'm always trying to make famous, the late great Milt Gwertzman, who is a Democratic operative, very smart guy. He formed the Gwertzman rule, don't trust national polls till after the first primary contest. And when I look at that poll, at 52%, all right, there's a dog food all the Republicans know, Trump chow. It's doing 52%. That means 48% have tasted it and are looking in other places. That shows vulnerability early. Now, whether or not people can operate, that's a big question. But the fact so many Republicans are now in, 3 years ago, if you said, you know what I'm going to do? What, Governor Rivers? I'm going to go primary Donald Trump. You know, your car would explode. Now, there's somebody jumping in every week. Well, it is a sign.
And one of the people that was supposed to be the leader in all this is Ron DeSantis. He's still in second place, but not necessarily getting great marks from political reporters so far.
No, and like I agree with Mike. I think national polls, cycle after cycle after cycle, the national press gets addicted to these things. What matters are the polling, and there hasn't been great polling in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. But what matters is those polls. And when you look at these poll numbers you just showed, and I like that you used the pre-Ozempic picture of Ron DeSantis in that graphic. DeSantis in Iowa and New Hampshire still has huge favorable ratings among Republican voters. So Trump went up after his two indictments so far in the polls. That was a effect of Republicans rallying to his defense. But DeSantis sinking in the polls doesn't mean that they are eliminating him from the choice. The fact that, as Mike said, Republicans are now open to other choices, about 49% of Republicans either want someone other than Trump or are queasy about Trump. And that wouldn't have happened even just 2 years ago. And so I think it's important to keep an eye out on Iowa polls, New Hampshire polls, and none of this inside baseball stuff really matters until the first debate in August, and whether Ron DeSantis is up to the challenge on that stage to throw a punch at Donald Trump or someone like Chris Christie throwing a punch at Donald Trump.
Well, and let's talk about Chris Christie, because you've got a great podcast out on Powers That Be that sort of does a deep dive into what's happening with Chris Christie. And you lay out this reality that most Republican voters don't want him, but a lot of Republican donors do. What's going on there?
And my colleague Teddy Schleifer at Puck also reported a lot of Democratic donors are giving money to Christie and like Super PAC. Christie now occupies this space where it's like never Trump Republicans, people who hang out in green rooms at TV stations like us, and Democrats who like watching him throw punches at Trump. There are some New Hampshire voters. In recent months, he's gone from 1% in New Hampshire to 7% in New Hampshire, according to St. Anselm College polling, which is a good poll. He's not going to win the primary, but he will add volatility to that debate stage. And I think what's important is, unlike 2016, he gives air cover to other Republicans either to also hit Trump or to be like, you can be the stalking horse. I'll turn the camera and do my thing. And Christie, Republicans don't trust Christie, but I do think he can make things a little more volatile on the debate
if he gets in the debate.
Yeah, good question.
Right.
Though he can also buy an hour of time and say, Trump, you're a coward. I'll be sitting here waiting. Just call him out. See how Trump's ego handles that. Christie can be a catalyst here. What we're having is a Republican family discussion. And we got one brother-in-law saying, Uncle Elmo's crazy, and we got to take the car keys away, or he's going to crash the car, and we're all screwed. And everybody, well, you can't talk about Uncle Elmo like that. You're all right, go home. And they throw the mean uncle out, and then there's a talk, what do we do about Uncle Elmo? So Christie is starting the wheels moving because he's showing the other guys you can do it. And you, after Christie started, they all started inching over a little bit, and the money's pushing harder because the money doesn't want to lose. And everybody in the party, except the hardest core Trump people, which is not 50%, it's 20, think Trump loses to Biden. They think he's the one guy Biden might be able to beat. And so now in Iowa, New Hampshire, you got $1 million on the air and new television every week from other people getting famous who all look like they can beat Biden. So you got to let this thing cook before you taste it. And that's what the end of this year in Iowa, New Hampshire is right. This time in New Hampshire, when I was with McCain, you know, we were starting the campaign. We were 3% in the polls. I remember I was in a diner. A guy said, you know who I like? I like that governor, McCain Andrews. You know, and that was a highly educated. It takes time for it to cook. And that's what the media business, it's hard because every day on cable TV has to be treated as the very important day in the campaign. Well, Ron DeSantis today tripped over his shoelaces in a stunning reversal. You know, you got to let it cook.
Well, after this segment, Uncle Elmo's at 7%.
Yeah, no,
see, new candidate.
You know, with crazy times demand crazy leadership. Yeah. I think Elmo has a shot.
Up next, our panel is going to be back to talk about President Biden, what's going on with him. But we go to break with a historic week in California politics. Robert Rivas officially sworn in as Speaker of California's Assembly after 7 years of Anthony Rendon in that job. All of California's top leaders on hand for the big celebration, which included plenty of music. So we go to break with some gospel.
The best is yet to come. Hold on, my brother, don't give up. Hold on, my sister, just look up. There is a master plan in store for you.
There's a new buzzword in the White House, Bidenomics.
Bidenomics is about building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down.
The White House is trying to make the phrase Bidenomics stick around the country, but will that work? Back with our panel, Peter Hamby, Mike Murphy, both with us. Peter, does this make sense, Bidenomics? I mean, you know what they're trying to do here is all about the economy, right?
Yeah, I think Biden has a very strong story to tell on the economy. Unfortunately, the main guy is not a very good storyteller other than a few lines at a time. You know, created more jobs than any president in modern history. Granted, a lot of that was post-pandemic, but still, it's a good story to tell. Inflation has been coming down for 11 straight months. You know, the thing with phrases like this is Bidenomics might work, I guess, but like Republicans can also just take Bidenomics and make it however they want to define it too, like the inflation president, gas prices, et cetera. But, you know, I think he has a very good story to tell. The problem is he's not a very good storyteller. And we also live in a media environment. It's very fractured. We have a lot of tune out among normal people, independent voters, low information voters who aren't really following politics every day. And so, you know, the narratives from last year about high gas prices, the price of eggs are still around, even though the facts are there. So, you know, once we get into the campaign, they start to put paid media, surrogate stuff behind this. Hopefully the economy is better. Maybe it'll work, but it seems kind of gimmicky.
And is the age thing an issue? I mean, this week we find out that he has a CPAP machine. He had this event with Nicole Wallace where he's on the air with her and just sort of walks off at the end. I mean, there's every week it seems like there's something that just plays into this narrative that he's an old guy.
You know, I think they're kind of in a bad perfect storm now, but their therapy animal is saying, oh, don't worry, Trump's going to win. He's invincible. Turn on cable TV and we can beat him. You know, if I were them, I'd be planning, what if Trump isn't the nominee? Because he's got two interlocking problems. There's a polling number we pay a lot of attention to called the right track, wrong track. Are people mad or happy? Are things going the right direction? We're at 70% wrong track. That is fire the president kind of number. They got a year to move it. So they're right that the economy is the issue. The too clever by half department should not work so late at the White House because Bidenomics says Biden economy. And if he owns the economy right now, he's sunk. So what they got to do is give him a, one, explain, be honest. Things are tough. Second, there's some green sprouts. There's some good news. And three, here's what I got to do, and here's who's going to win and who's going to lose. Here's whose side I'm on. Now, the old thing is really tough because it's always there. Right. It's like having antlers. He can come in and say, I've knocked down inflation a point, and the press goes, what about the antlers? And I don't know how they fix that other than directly engaging him on a detailed level that he's never been able to communicate.
There's one other really good weather vane poll number to watch along with the right track, wrong track, which is in a general election, who's winning on the issue of the economy?
Right.
Biden barely, narrowly won that number according to exit polls in 2020. But usually in modern times, whoever wins best on the economy wins the presidency, and Biden is not doing well on that number right now.
Right now, 64% of the country do not approve of the way Joe Biden is handling the economy. And then there's Hunter Biden, which is a big story on certain cable networks and not a big story on others. You wrote in Puck about that and about that some people in the media are getting a little more aggressive on covering that. What do you make of the way that's all being talked about?
I was struck by the White House press briefing two Fridays ago, where Peter Baker from the New York Times, like mainstream reporters from the TV networks, national networks, were asking White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre about Hunter Biden, about is there something else going on here? That only jumped out at me because I don't necessarily think right now it's going to move the needle with independent voters or anything like that. But until now, it's really felt like this story has been confined to Rupert Murdoch media, Breitbart, The Daily Wire, just sort of like right-wing internet media. House Republicans are screaming about it every day. Even though there's no smoking gun connecting any of Hunter's business dealings to President Biden, they're throwing chum in the water to muddy the waters. And it just reminded me a little bit of 2016 when the right-wing web sort of pushed these negative stories about Hillary into the mainstream media gradually and, you know, bada bing, bada boom, 3 days before the election, email server, doubts about Hillary's trust. I don't think the same trust issues apply to Biden as they did to Hillary, but it is interesting that the story doesn't seem to be going anywhere for Biden.
Mike, one thing that could help Joe Biden is the Supreme Court. We saw what they did on abortion. That helped Democrats last year. Now this week on affirmative action, a big move. Does that galvanize the left? Does that help him?
We're in kind of a new era in politics where the Supreme Court, and I'm a conservative, I agree with some of those rulings, but politically, when the Supreme Court is perceived for the first time in memory to be taking rights away from people, it creates a whole new issue set to fight over. And the biggest one is abortion rights. The Republicans normally pro-life, now we don't have to talk about it anymore. But then they became the dog that caught the car. And the culture warriors want to double down on this. And that gives the Democrats, and they've proven this at the polls in the last election cycle, a very powerful wedge issue. And there are some other issues now. I don't think they're as powerful by far. But yeah, abortion is going to be a bigger factor than normally. And I think the court in general, in the Senate races and in the presidential. But just quickly on Hunter Biden, it's a distraction. Real voters want to hire an economic manager. So the Republicans investing in this is just therapy. It makes them feel morally superior to the other side. Look at what a bunch of crooks they are. And the Democrats can have the same disease. Can you believe Trump stiffed a waitress today? What an awful person. It's food for their own stuff. But for voters in the middle who pick the president, it's the economy. And both parties get off winning that message battle to their peril. And I think the Republicans are being strategically stupid about this.
So Joe Biden doesn't have a sort of mainstream challenger in the Democratic primary, but he does have Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who showed off some real muscle this week. And we don't mean political muscle, we mean actual muscle. Here's him at your old gym, Gold's, Peter. What did you make of his form, and what do you make of the RFK campaign?
Oh, man. So, okay, you're doing like 6 or 7 reps at 115. I mean, Arnold would never. I would never. I could do that in my sleep. Sorry to brag. But I used to work out at Gold's a lot. I talked to my trainer about this. I lift weights with him. He was like, that dude's on gear. Gear is a term for steroids.
Right.
He looks great shirtless. But, like, look, the people on the internet who are like, this little guy will be our most jacked president ever, people who are rooting for RFK Jr., continue to be either sort of like MAGA scoundrels who are like rooting for someone disruptive in the Democratic primary, or the kind of like anti-vax wellness types who shop at Erewhon and share videos of Russell Brand on the internet. It's just like, it's a small group of people.
Yeah, although, Mike, we've heard the gear allegations against you before.
Oh, so we don't want to. Well, as Arnold's longtime fitness coach, right. I mean, I have my own, my own opinions. Yeah. But no, this guy's a sideshow, but here's the dangerous part. The machine that wants clicks and views likes a sideshow. So he gets free attention, which is the old George Lakoff thing. Don't think of an elephant. Well, you know, here, think of an elephant. The other problem is when the Democrats wiped out the New Hampshire primary and changed the calendar, they opened a place for somebody to, quote, surge against Biden in a half-protest vote, creating kind of a phony media story that could elevate it more. Mm-hmm. So they have some leaks in their boat that are self-created that give a kook like this an opportunity
to make
trouble.
Mike makes a smart point, too, that RFK Jr. is leaning in to the way media works now. He's doing every podcast. He's posting videos on the internet at a time when establishment media is, you know, going down in views. You have to do what you do, which is you do this. But you also, you know, you're on social media all the time. Right. That's how you reach people. And Biden, the Democratic incumbent, is an establishment media beast who is uncomfortable in those spaces.
Right.
And so, you know, if RFK Jr. goes on Joe Rogan's podcast, people are talking about
it. That becomes the age thing again for Biden. He's sitting there. We got to make a talkie and get our message out. And this guy's all over Instagram, you know, standing on his head in his underwear.
Are you
more clicks.
Are you suggesting not everybody reads David Brooks in the New York Times every week? So real quickly, the state of the California Senate race.
Yeah.
Where are we at right now? How do you see things on that front?
Well, you got two powerhouse members of Congress, Adam Schiff and Katie Porter. She is a good Elizabeth Warren-style lefty demagogue. So if that horse gets attention, it'll start to run. Schiff has more money, and he's got Nancy Pelosi. And if I were them, I'd weld her right next to him and have a vice candidate for a while. It would help him a little because he's not Mr. Dynamite. The fight will be for the North, where a lot of the Democratic votes are, and there's nobody serious, Barbara Lee, member of Congress, but isn't as big of a political player, up North. And that's another Pelosi angle. So I think Schiff is holding more cards. I'd make him the favorite, but I wouldn't bet my house because Porter put a camera on her. She'll sell some tickets from the left.
And of course, Lee would say that she's a serious candidate, but
very serious.
Yeah.
Right. It's still so early, first of all. Schiff, I do think, is well known, as is Porter, among the Elizabeth Warren set. I think this kind of like white liberals who watch MSNBC a lot know everything about these two. They don't know a lot about Barbara Lee. And what I'm interested in is seeing, do any of these two front runners, because they're both at like 17%, have any rapport with Hispanic voters or black voters in this state? Like, they do seem both, like, in the domain of white liberals who are giving $5 every time they send out an email attacking Donald Trump. Have people who don't follow politics at all paid attention to these two yet?
Right.
We'll see when Adam Schiff starts going on TV with all of his money.
And one gift is the Republicans have decided to declare a war on Schiff, which is a gift to him.
Right.
You know? Right. On the other hand, Katie's kind of a natural, just, and Schiff's kind of head of the accounting committee.
We just finished the second fundraising quarter. This was the quarter in which they tried to censure Adam Schiff in Congress.
They did.
I guarantee you he raised a lot of money. We'll see how much shows up in the report. But she's a good fundraiser, too.
And the big question is there going to be a Republican who gets enough support to end up in the top two and essentially end this thing in March of next year?
Yeah, we'll a lot of it will be New Hampshire. If somebody can cut Trump in...
No, I mean in the California primary. Is there a Republican? Does Eric Early get enough support?
Yeah. Well, Steve Garvey has been rumored, but this is a hard state for an R.
Yeah.
And when you win the primary, then you can kind of take the rest of the campaign off. That's the problem.
Right. All right. Well, thanks, guys. We really appreciate you being so smart. Listen to their podcast for more of this stuff.
Our thanks to Mike and to Peter. And now to our conversation with Rick Caruso about the Pope.
Rick Caruso is just back from the Vatican, where he and his family met with Pope Francis to talk about charity work in L.A. Caruso is a practicing Catholic. He helped build the Caruso Catholic Center at USC. It's a huge part of his life. Rick Caruso, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Good seeing you.
What was that like?
It was pretty amazing. You know, of all the people I'd like to meet around the world, he was probably one, two, three, and four. I think he's just a remarkable human being in terms of what he stands for. And listen, he has a billion people sort of in his flock, right? He's a very unusual guy, but we were invited there. It was an incredible honor. I was very humbled by it. And it was great to talk about Los Angeles with him. And he knows a lot about Los Angeles, which was great.
And your message was about a lot of the charity work you do, Para Los Niños, Operation Progress.
Right.
And you brought artwork from a kid that you've helped to mentor.
Yeah.
We've got a picture of this piece of art that we want to show. What was the story there, and what did you tell him about it?
So I still get chills thinking about this, to be honest, because when I was first contacted that the Holy Father has invited us there, I sort of didn't believe it at first. But he knew about our work at Para Los Niños on Skid Row and Operation Progress, and he's very focused on young kids who are at or below the poverty level. And he has a foundation that is working with those kids to make sure they have the right education. And he's really big on playing sports. Because as a young kid, he loved soccer. But they would take rags and they would tie the rags together because they couldn't afford a ball. And it was this rag ball. And that's sort of the symbol. And so he wanted to talk to us to thank us for what we do, encourage us to do more, but also to find ways to work together in Los Angeles to help young kids who are really in impoverished conditions.
And so you presented a piece of art.
So this young student is a fourth grader, Para Los Niños, sort of came from Skid Row and then into the school. And the picture and the story is about the change of his life and the opportunity that's been given him and now his future forward and how grateful he is. And the Holy Father was just mesmerized by it. And so it was really neat. His emissary is actually coming out in a few weeks, and we're going to go down to Para Los Niños so they can see it for themselves.
Well, and let's talk people real briefly on what Para Los Niños and Operation Progress is for people that may not be familiar with the work.
So all the students, the families that are on Para Los Niños, the school that Tina and I have supported for over 30 years is literally right in the middle of Skid Row. And every one of those families are at or below the poverty line. They're all working, but they're working poor. Many of the families, four or five, living together in an apartment. Those kids go to school free of charge. And it is really the opportunity that changes their life. Operation Progress is down in South LA, in part of the Watts area. And that's where we take children that are coming out of the housing projects, Nickerson Gardens, for example. We team them up with a police officer, LAPD. They're their mentor. And then Operation Progress, with our support and others, takes care of those kids from a scholarship education standpoint from third grade all the way through college. And we've had about 300 students go through there.
And we've met them and been out there with them. And it really is an incredible thing. I was thinking about you, what meeting the Pope must have felt like for you, because your grandfather came here from Italy with nothing, serious Catholic. Your family is very serious about this. You meet with a priest every week, right, for dinner.
Right, our pastor.
Were you thinking of your grandfather and that journey, and now his grandson is invited to the Vatican with the Pope?
Well, I was. It's a bit overwhelming. And I think whether you're Catholic or you're not, to meet this man, because of who he is, he's not, in my opinion, not just the Pope. And I was thinking of my grandparents and what they had to do and being poor and coming to this country. Like Francis's, Pope Francis was very poor family, did not want to be the Pope, right? And is working so hard every day to change the direction of the church. And this is why I like him so much, to make it more welcoming, to make it more accepting, to have people come in and feel good. And he joked, my son Alex was holding his book and he looked at Alex and he said, oh, you must be a rebel also like me, you know, because he views himself as being a rebel and really fighting the old ways.
What did it mean for you to be able to introduce your kids to the Pope?
Tough, very emotional. You know me, I'm a crybaby. I was doing great until I started introducing the kids. And then I got choked up and he grabbed my arm and we just had sort of that moment together. He is a very kind, dear man. I know. Gianna, as we left, really wrapped it up well. She said, I just wanted to hug him. He has a kindness and a dearness to him, a strength, no doubt, but a kindness and a dearness to him. And his message, I said, how do you manage everything that's coming at you? And how do you prioritize and all this? He said, it's all about humor. He goes, my daily prayer every morning, and he gave us a copy of the prayer, is praying to have humor in my life. And he looked at the kids and he said, you can accomplish anything as long as you have a good sense of humor and have joy in your life.
Wow.
And I just thought that was so powerful because it's not what I expected for him to say. I thought maybe he'd say discernment and deep prayer. And he said, enjoy life, have humor. You can accomplish everything.
How profound that is. Yeah. Wow. And real quickly, I know this is not something else you're passionate about. We got the homeless count this week in Los Angeles. It showed the numbers are up. This was a count done in January, right after Karen Bass took over. Your take on where things are at right now and what more needs to be done, because clearly not enough is being done. We spent billions and the problem's getting worse.
Right. Crisis is growing on the street. We need to say it. Mental health crisis on the street is growing. The drug addiction on the street is growing. I saw some recent pictures today of what's happening. We have to build housing. You can't solve this problem unless you're building permanent, sustainable housing to get people off the streets and wrap it around with services. We know the solution. It's out there. Buckle down, speed up, get it done.
There you go. Rick Caruso, great to see you.
What a week for you.
It was a great week.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks.
Our thanks to Rick Caruso, our thanks to Mike and to Peter, and our thanks to you for listening. It's been an exciting week for us here at The Issue Is. The L.A. Press Club honored our special show that we did with L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti last year, where we rode along with him as he was leaving office. They named us Best Profile. A special shout-out to editor Debbie Kim for her extraordinary work on that. And to Rudy Leyva, our photographer, going above and beyond with GoPros, sitting in the back of a car, moving around. They were incredible to work with on that project. Also was honored to be named as TV Journalist of the Year by them, an acknowledgement of our entire team's hard work. It was really, really cool to be there and to meet so many other great journalists. Next week, we'll be back with more. Brett Baer will be joining us from Washington. Until then, I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening. And happy 4th of July.